afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of It's Easy Sun, your life lessons on your journey to your purpose. Welcome to another week, and welcome to another exciting show. We're going across the diaspora this week to spend some time with a good friend of mine, a gentleman that I've come to admire from a distance. He doesn't know this. He'll probably like, what? But a gentleman that I have, when I got to Howard University, was someone I met for the first time, and just watched him as an academician in many ways, a scholar in many ways. But he's a dentist, but he doesn't know this. He's more than a dentist. He's an inspiration to so many orthodontics. He'll tell me what the real word is. Mm-hmm. But he has done so much for so many people by way of just being an inspiration. And I'm so glad that he has joined us today. He's a fellow Jamaican, someone that a lot of people look up to and seek advice and counsel. And when we were in college, was like a father figure to many, setting us straight, making sure we were going to class and that kind of stuff. So we're in for a treat today. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, I welcome to the podcast this week my good friend, Dr. Nigel Knight. Dr. Knight, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Jerry. Great to be able to join you on one of your podcasts. You know, I've been listening to the people you've had on. I just hope that, I'll be able to, you know, pass some of my journey and knowledge on to those listening.
Absolutely. I know you will. Knowing your history, your background, and what you do currently, it's going to be a fun hour. So like all my other guests, I don't have any pre-planned questions. I just ask one open-ended question. And then based on your responses, we will end up filling out an hour before you know it. So let's just jump right in. So who is Dr. Nigel Knight? What's his background, his early years, his growing up, and the things that influenced him to make him who he is today?
All right. So, Jerry, a lot of people don't know, I was actually born in the UK.
Oh, wow.
My mom is Guyanese. My dad is from Jamaica. They met when they were both studying medicine here in Jamaica. My mother is from a very large family. She's one of eight. Dad is one of three. And they were first generations that went into the sciences. You know, both of them, daddy was an obstetrician and gynecologist. Mommy was an anesthesiologist specializing in pediatrics. And when they went to specialize over in the UK in London, I'm not sure when they found the time, but that's when I was conceived. I'm one of three, I'm the middle child. I have an older sister, younger brother. So they had me when they're up there. I spent about a year up there, and then my maternal grandmother came for me and brought me back to Jamaica, leaving my parents there still doing a specialty. So I actually lived, I was brought up with my grandparents for about, I'd say maybe 2 years, 3 years until my parents came back. And after that, created a foundation, one, a very strong faith, two, with family. Family was huge, huge growing up. In my grandparents' house, I mean, everything was very structured. You know, you'd have lunch at a certain time, you'd have dinner at a certain time, you'd sit at the table, no elbows on the table, you'd have a glass of water in front of you. Yeah. You couldn't touch a glass of water. Even if you're choking, you couldn't touch a glass of water until you're eating. You know? Then when my parents finally came back home, you know, we moved back to them. I went to Peter and Paul, and then from Peter and Paul, actually passed for JC, but I got a transfer to Campion.
Oh, wow.
And both my uncle is a dentist as well, but both my dad and uncle actually were from George's, but I went to Campion at the time. Did my stint at Campion, and I was young for my year, so I was born in December. So like taking a common entrance, I had like three tries to take the common entrance.
Right.
And I say it how it is. I mean, academics was not one of my things that I was really, you know, pushing for at that age. You know, it was just going through the turns of going through high school. Got to fifth form at Campion, average student. You know, it was third form. The dean, academic dean, made a joke to my mom and said that Nigel seems to think that promotion to fourth form is automatic.
Right.
You know, so it was like 32 as always at the bottom of the class. did my O-levels, got fairly decent grades, but that summer was a defining summer in my life. My parents, you know, because of my age, I never had a driver's license. My best friend who lived one road, a house down from me, had a driver's license. Every night, I go out with him, and that's the last person to come back home, because he dropped everybody off first. So I was coming home, you know, wee hours of the morning. And, you know, I look back as a parent now, my parents just couldn't take it anymore. You know, they sent me to the summer vacation in Dallas with some family friends. And on return, in that time, they had made plans for me. I came back and there was a suitcase on the bed. There was a British Airways ticket and a brochure of a school called Felsted up in the UK. In 2 days, I was on a plane by myself. They took me to the airport, got on a plane by myself to New York to pick up some funds from my aunt that was there. Went across the Atlantic. My uncle, my mom's brother, picked me up, spent a night there, and then he drove me up to this boarding school in the middle of nowhere.
Wow. Basically. Wow.
And I was here for 2 years. That's where I did my A-levels. That was a defining moment for me. That's where I think I learned a lot about my personality. I learned to basically make decisions on my own. You know, coming from a private home and you go into a communal shower with 10 people, you know, there's a lot to by baptism by fire.
Yeah.
Academically, I don't think it was all that great, but at the end of it, by then I knew I wanted to do dentistry. I knew my parents both being that the life of a medical doctor, especially daddy, he was always out late with babies, you know, delivering babies. Mommy was always in the operating theater. So, you know, they were great parents, and you look back on it now and you knew what they were doing for you. They were paving a path for you. Mm-hmm. They always told me from back then, you know, you had a lot of friends you went to school with whose parents had businesses. They'd say, look, you know, we don't have a business for you to come into, right? Yeah. All we can do for you is give you a runway. And then at some point you have to flap your wings and you're going to need to take off. Mm-hmm. And we're going to make that runway as smooth as possible, but that's all we can do for your son. That's all we can do for you. So I made a decision by then that if I'd wanted to, if and when I did get married and have a family, I wanted to spend more time with my family. So like in the sciences, that was a decision to do dentistry. I came back to Jamaica, did a year up at UWE in natural sciences. Got through that, but still, you know, academics just wasn't really my forefront then. At the end of that year, that's when, you know, things sort of came to a bump and my parents were like, you know, you need to make a decision. You know, we can't continue spending money on you. You know, you need to really decide what you want to do. So I did some resits. I got through and I got into the second year at UWE. And then that's when my uncle sat me down, Louis Knight, who is a dentist. And he said, you're really interested in doing dentistry. He said, yes, that's what I want to do. You know, so he said, okay, no problem. He made a phone call to Dr. Hugh Duhaney, who was a professor down at the dental school at Howard. He walked my application up the hill and handed it in for me. And that was when I got into Howard.
Wow.
And that was for January. So I had a half a year to what I thought would be, you know, enjoy life. My parents said, no, you need to find a job. I got a job as a lab technician at the blood bank up at UWE Hospital. And again, another defining moment, you know, that 4 or 5 months of work, I get paid every 2 weeks. And on a Friday, you get paid, you know, you go with some friends, go by Devon House, you buy a cold beer, have something. And that was your paycheck. Your paycheck was done. And that's when I said to myself, there's no way I can go through life, you know, living like this. I need to really do something in my life. Mm-hmm. So I went up to Howard in January. And for me, the rest really was, you know, coming from England, where you're in a school with 800 whites and you're like 5 blacks. When I went to, and, you know, racism was, you know, up in England, you got a lot of racism. It was a little easier for me because coming from the Caribbean, they looked at Caribbean blacks differently to the UK blacks. And there was a big difference in how I was treated up there. But that's my first encounter with racism. But going to Howard, I just blended in. I went there. It was the greatest thing. I was just one of many, you know, person on campus.
Yeah.
And Jamaicans were great. Then you had a lot of Caribbean students. We all helped each other. And that's when I met so many people from different parts of the island. And everybody was on a mission. And at that point, it was, I call it turning the corner. But for me, it was definitive where, you know, it became like a bright headlight. You know, just saying to myself, you know, all these years, my parents have been doing, giving. I've been taking. You know, there comes a time where I just said, I need to give something back. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started giving back. I think I must have gotten like 1B in the 2 years as on the hill. You know, and it was, to me, it was great getting these grades and showing my parents. And then it moved from that to me getting these grades and, you know, getting a certain amount. You know, I feel good getting these good grades.
Right.
And then they put me in the advanced program to go straight into dental school. My parents still said, nope. Get a first degree first. I don't want to take a chance. And you go on there and you change your mind. Mm-hmm. So I didn't go into the advanced program, but finish up on the hill, magna cum laude, apply to dental schools. Every dental school I went to interview, it was the greatest thing, Jerry. You'd sit down there, you know, you'd rehearse for these interviews and you go in there and nobody would ask you a question because, you know, on paper, you're what you're looking for. They would just
right.
Yeah. Yeah, this is what this institution is going to offer you, you know, and mm-hmm. we want you to come here. And that was on every interview. That's what I got. I chose to stay at Howard, went down to Howard. And, you know, by then, you know, as I was churning, I was second in my class, you know, honor society down there, went through my 4 years, you know, graduated with, you know, lots of awards and everything like that. And then applied to Howard orthodontics. Same principle again, top of the class. Only like the top 10% can really get into any author residency. And everywhere I interviewed, I got in. You know, it was such, you know, it was so delightful. I decided to stay at Howard again. So that's why I always tell people, don't, yes, you saw me there. I was there for 8 years, but it wasn't because I wasn't doing well in school. Because I did 3 degrees.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And that was finished. Ortho, and by then I decided I wanted to move back home. You know, that was my dream, to come back home. And, you know, that went, I met my now partner, Dr. Beck, came up there and did a presentation. And he asked me, what are your plans? I said, well, I want to go back to Jamaica. And he said, well, it's up to you. You're going to, it'll be great coming back. If you go on your own, if you join somebody, you know, you're going to do really well. And I ended up joining him, that's what, 25 years ago in the
25 years, Nigel.
Wow. Years.
Wow. Well, you know what? I'm going to do something that I do with all the guests. I'm watching your body language and your facial expressions. And mom and dad means a lot because throughout the narrative you just shared, it almost seemed at every turn you made, the strength of mom and dad put you on the right path. That's the best way that I would say it. So I'm going to go take you all the way back to home. What was that like, home? Older sister, younger brother, and academics. Because obviously, two medical professionals. But then what happened with you? I'm still shocked because I know you with the awards, top of the class, all that stuff. But help us to understand, what was the home like, the discipline, the atmosphere at home, because that definitely has something to do and shape where you are today.
I mean, other than my faith, my faith, Jerry, family is the most important thing for me. It's and up to this day, I mean, you know, anybody will tell you if they want to go play golf, they want to go to the beach or do something on Sunday, that's a no-no. You know, Sundays is always a family day. You know, I grew up in a huge family. I mean, you had the uncle and aunts that were blood uncle and aunts, but then you had this huge group of good friends, your parents' friends, and everybody's an uncle and aunt. You know, when it came to Christmas, starting from around the 16th of December straight through to the 1st or 2nd of January, you had our uncle and aunt's house to go through, you know. Mm-hmm. My family was really huge. You know, both my sister and my brother, I mean, academically, they're very good. I think out of all of them that I wasn't the brightest of them all, you know, but all of us were gifted in terms of, you know, the coming from our parents and the example that our parents showed us. I mean, all of them were scholars, bar none. They did excellent in school, med school, everything like that. So the example was there, you know, but the turning point, Jerry, I can't call it a turning point, you know, you had the family part of it, which was not an issue. You knew Sunday breakfast, no matter where you went on the weekend, you know, you had to be back there for breakfast. Same thing with dinner, lunch on Sunday, you had to be back there. There was Sunday mass every morning, or if you ever made the morning, you'd be there in the afternoon. You know, but there are certain things you just grew up just knowing that's family.
Right.
And that passes on generation. All my cousins, everything that you see, it's something we look back. You know, growing up, it was just huge for us. You know, we really had a lot of influence coming from our family members.
Mm-hmm. So this is actually very interesting because we had our mutually good friend, Oliver McIntosh, on this podcast. And he said to me when he was doing his kind of trying to figure stuff out, you were the one that sat him down and said, look, you didn't come to Howard to DJ. You came to Howard to study. So now that you're on the other side of it, do you feel as if family and the extended family, is that where you get the sense of community from? And you're always helping people. So was that just from the household, or was that just the upbringing, the big family, caring for others? Was that just innate in you?
It was innate. Everybody. I mean, every stage of your life, and there was something happening, you had an uncle or an aunt that you could turn to, that they'd reach out, you know, and you see you had some, you know, you could speak to some of your uncles and your aunts about stuff you wouldn't even speak to your parents about, but there was always somebody, anything that came up that you could always reach out to. You know, yeah. It played a huge, really big priority in everything. And, you know, going through life, just like when you heard, you know, we think about our friends, I mean, I look at you with everything you're doing, Ollie, Dan, it's all a learning experience. I mean, you look back on it now, it seems simple, but you know, you go through it a lot through examples that you've seen. And I always tell, I describe it as the almost like the totem pole of life. You know, you always said you wanted to get married once, you know, you get married, all of a sudden you move down one rung on the totem pole, then you have right. Your first child, you go down another level, then you have a second child, you go down another level. And you know, one of the hardest things when it came to family initially for me was learning that it's no longer about me, you know?
Right.
You know, it's about you get married, you take on another response. Each child you have, you take on another responsibility. And then, you know, I look back in life and this totem pole, at the end of the day, you know, you're the foundation of your totem pole in life. And, wow. You know, you're down there just supporting and helping everybody develop in this totem pole that you have created through your life.
Yeah. So as you think about your career now and your time at Howard, all that you've accomplished and everything else, was your journey, and I ask this of pretty much all the guests, now that you're looking back, the meanderings through the early childhood, UK, and all the things you shared, but if you have two sons, two accomplished young people. And I see your eldest has this community spirit about him as well. You know, the things he do for the community, helping others. Your youngest is just as engaged, driven, passion. If you were to talk to young people today, other than the two that you're raising as men, what would your journey, or what could you share from your journey thus far with others who probably took a missed turn and couldn't come back because they didn't have the parents or they didn't have the family structure? What words could you share with us or with them from your experiences?
One of the main things, my motto in life, which I tell my sons all the while, I tell all know this, that life is only as complicated, you know, as simple as that sounds. You know, if you can slow down a little bit when you're making a decision, and you can just say to yourself, okay, if I decide to do this, what will be the repercussions? You can just step back for a little before a lot of the decisions you make in life. You'll find that if you look back and you see, you'll think back and say, well, if I'd only have done this, I wouldn't have gone down this path. So it's, and that's one thing I always say, like, it's only as complicated as you make, you know, life. The other thing is that in life, you know, pride is a hell of a thing, but everybody's going to make mistakes, and you shouldn't try reinventing the wheel. You know, there's always somebody to, you know, once you've reached a roadblock, you know, be open, you know, listen to advice. There's a lot of good advice out there, you know, and just don't be so hard on yourself. You know, there's nothing that beats a good failure, but if you never fail, you never knew you're going to fail, you know, and then you can always bounce back. You know, so don't, you know, just don't be afraid to take chances and fail. That's the only way you learn. Mm-hmm. And especially when I was studying at Howard, when it came to examinations, you definitely know you have an exam in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's nervous about that. But you said, look, I have an exam 2 weeks on Tuesday. So what am I going to do? I'm going to make sure 2 weeks on Tuesday that I'm going to be prepared.
Right.
You know it's going to happen. You know it's going to come. The only thing you can do is just say, well, I'm prepared for it. You know, don't meander around or anything. Just go straight to that day on Tuesday and say, I'm going to be ready. And that Tuesday comes. You know, you have a lot of little tricks at school. I tell them, you have an exam that they attend at school, Monday to Friday. You know, you start studying the Friday exam first. And then closer to the exam time, you start studying Monday, so that by the time you reach the middle of the week and you get a little frazzled out, you know, you're ready for the end of the week. You know, so a lot is just preparation.
That's interesting. Preparation. I've never heard that methodology before, but it makes sense. It makes sense. So, yeah. So as I'm sitting here listening to you, and this is why these podcasts are so interesting to me, because I think I know someone and I know them from a certain lens. Hanging out on the yard, the flagpole and all that stuff, hearing the great things that you're doing. But people can see you now and they see the success that you have. But could you share with us one thing that was probably, you could say, was the lowest point? And what is one thing that you would consider the highest point? And your thoughts of the in between those two points. What would those two things be?
I'd have to say, you know, I always tell my sons that my lowest point, I think, was after Yui, because Yui was the first time, you know, I failed. I mean, I really failed. I did physics, chemistry, and zoology. Passed zoology. I got a pass. And failed physics. I had to retake physics, retake chemistry. You know, and that was the first time I'd really failed. And for me, that was like rock bottom when it came to my academics. And up to this day, if I close my eyes, it was like I can feel that feeling, Jerry, like it was yesterday.
Wow.
It's in the pits of your stomach. That feeling of failure. Right.
Yeah.
And I'd say graduating from not even my first year, that's it, for dentistry. That graduation day when I finished third of my class, you know, that accomplishment, you know, seeing my parents, you know, my family, you know, just seeing how proud they were of me then, you know, that discrepancy between their power and dental school and UWE, you know, I think that was when I really, really changed my whole outlook on life. And it's, you know, it's continued from, I mean, I was fortunate, and other things, you know, mentoring. I can't say enough on having mentors. I was fortunate when I was in my orthodontic program, Dr. Russell usually takes on a student in the second year, but he took me from my first year. So I had 2 years with him working in his practice. And then moving back to Jamaica with my now partner, Dr. Beck, You know, I had the first. When I went there, it was, I'd never seen anything like that. I mean, you go from a clinic seeing five patients, and then you get dropped into a clinic, see maybe patients, but having somebody there that can help you along the way. You know? So I'm very strong in, you know, passing it on, you know, always tell, you know, a lot of stuff I do, and, you know, people are in need, and you do something, especially with Campion, you know, I always tell them, you know, they're so happier, they're so appreciative, the parents, everything, and, you know, they want to do something. I said, just pass it on. You'll be in a position one day that you'll be able to, you know, look back at somebody and see that somebody needs something, and you just pass that, you know, that grace on to somebody, you know,
yeah,
go through.
But, you know, you have an interesting path, because you mentioned that after you finished up dental school, you went orthodontics, but then you decided to go back home to Jamaica. Most people decided to stay in the U.S., but not only did you go back to Jamaica, you ended up starting your own practice or partnering in your own practice. Where did that entrepreneurial spirit come from? Was that mom and dad and seeing them be in that mode? Because right now in Jamaica, it's living abroad, you could say, boy, it must be rough, but you guys are making it. So that entrepreneurial spirit, where did that come from?
It was, I would tell you this about the third world too. And, when I moved back here in terms of orthodontics, I was there were only two here. It was three of us that came back. But the level of orthodontics that was being practiced here in Jamaica was like in the, I'd say the top 20% that I've seen happening up in North America.
Wow.
So from the get-go, and I hit the ground running when I came here, you know, it's, you know, and especially in the science field, whether it be dentistry, medicine, you know, your C credits, your further education, you know, we traveled a lot. When I came down here almost like 2-3 times a year, I'd be overseas, you know, you go into conferences, and any new technology they had, you know, we had it, we were the first to get it down here compared to my counterparts up in North America.
Wow.
You know, so, you know, there's always that drive down here that you, if you're gonna do orthodontics, you know, the word on the street is that you're gonna be doing first world orthodontics. And that's the only way you're gonna do it. We're in Montego Bay, we're currently in Otrios. We started 9 years ago, we started a small practice in the only fully orthodontic practice in Providencia, in Turks and Caicos. You know, we set up the way that we're practicing here in Kingston. You know, so it's in my mind, if you're gonna do it, you have to do it to your best. And there's only one level that you're gonna do that in terms of you can't go halfway, you know, in the profession when you're doing orthodontics.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, some of my guests that I've had on the show, they're your patients, and all of them got a pretty smile. So that's the work that you do. Mm-hmm. But on your social side and the things that you do and give back to people and helping the community, when you look at, you're there in Jamaica now, and people will always have, in any society, people always harp on the things that are wrong or negative or bad. And we all know that's the case. But this side of you that you're giving back, how do you get other people to think that way, especially when you know there are others that can help but won't help? How can you encourage others or bring them along? Because, you know, we're, no man is an island, and we need each other, but it just seems as if you have another gift in this area of just inspiring people to do stuff in the community. How would you go about getting others to see the bigger picture for what I would consider a brighter Jamaica, if you will?
That's a interesting question, because, you know, for people that know me, they know I'm very humble. So when I do give or I do, I sort of, you all know about it.
Right.
You know, so I don't sort of broadcast it. The one thing, and I have to say it here, is, you know, I was very fortunate that I was blessed with a very beautiful wife. And her personality is one that is of giving, nonstop giving. You know, and
that is so true.
It's a running joke because, you know, she's from the Bahamas and she's here in Jamaica now, and she's like the honorary Jamaican. Everybody knows. Oh, you met Nigel, this is Alvito's husband. But when it comes to that, you know, she's very good in terms of finding, you know, setting out, you know, networking, finding out what's needed where, and knowing who to contact. And it's the truth is that everybody and majority of people you know down here, mm-hmm. they want to do it, but you just need to give them an avenue to do it, right? Mm-hmm. And once you can lead by example, and you can pick up the phone and call and say, look, I want to do so and so and so and so, you know, this is what we need. You know, nobody ever tells you no. You know, nobody else tells you no. So everybody, it's in everybody, but some people you just need to give them a little sort of push to have them move forward with it.
So Alvita is giving the push and you just go along with the push. That sounds just about, that is actually an accurate statement. So when you look at your station now, because I'm always going to come back to your station and have you pivot to somewhere else. But you came back. I'm still amazed that it's 25 years. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I'm actually feeling pretty old knowing it's that long. But 25 years in, what are some of the goals and aspirations you have personally, and then some that you want to see societally? Given all that you've shared, your strong family roots, your sense of community, your sense of helping others, all of those things wrapped into one. What is next for you as Dr. Knight, and you are your vision of what you would want to see for, say, greater society?
Well, real quickly, in my profession in dentistry, I'm getting ready to give my tenure up here now. You only can do 2 terms. But I'm the chairman of the Dental Council of Jamaica.
Oh, wow.
It's been an interesting journey. It was, I'd love to feel it was because of my skills in dentistry that put me there. But it was more my personal skills because anything in government, there's a lot of politics. And there was need to have somebody level-headed to chair the council a few years back. And we've been doing a lot. You know, I think I have one more year there to finish that off. After that, I think I'm a personal level. We are now building an office here, so that's going to take a lot of my time away for the next at least 2 years. For Jamaica on a whole, you know, we need to, and it has to start from the ground roots. You know, and everybody complains about this and complains about that. But it's, you know, if everybody can, you know, start giving a little bit back, I just find, you know, it's a lot to be done and it's overwhelming. And nobody can sit back and say that I'm going to blanket all of this. But if we, as people here in Jamaica that are really want to do a part, you know, we can find small areas. You saw the other day, you know, we have a group of chat every day, and you saw the other day with Courtney and the health clinics. I mean, that's a great initiative.
That was impressive.
Yeah. They get, you know, Courtney came out and said that, and I think you're going to see a lot more of that happening in that area. So you just need to find these, you know, small areas where everybody can do a little bit. You know, you can't find people to come out and, like I said, go huge into something. But if you can get a group of people to find something and do a little, everybody contributes a little, then you start things moving. And the more you can get that movement, like a wave started, mm-hmm. then you see a lot more start to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Nigel, we're about 10, 15 more minutes, something like that. Mm-hmm. But I'm a young man sitting in Jamaica. I live in I don't know. I live down by Torrington Bridge, right? And I see a Dr. Knight, and I want to be a Dr. Knight. How do I become a Dr. Knight? What do I have to do to become a Dr. Knight? And I'm sitting down here below Crossroads, but I want to be a Dr. Knight. How do I become a Dr. Knight?
Well, it's funny that you say that, but it goes back to, you know, you have to really have a mentor, somebody to really talk to. You have to start believing in yourself. And it's all about academics. You know, it's just like, I mean, it's not the same comparison, but it's, you know, you have, it's like my parents telling me, I don't have a business for you to go into, right? So whatever you're doing, you have to make sure that, you know, you can do it for yourself. And the importance of academics and excelling in academics, because once you can get that knowledge, you know, with knowledge, doors open, then start moving from point to point. You get the money will be there, you get scholarships. You know, it's hard to be able to point out, and that's the only way you can do it, is letting somebody understand that through your books and the knowledge, that's what's going to open all the doors for you in life. You know, and you know, people, you know, look at me and, oh yeah, you're an orthodontist, you know, you have it made. Jerry, I found something that I love, right? And if you can find a way of doing something that you really do love, then with faith, and I have to tell you, every morning you must do your devotions, I mean, I'm fully believing that, but with faith and going after something that you really love, you'll be amazed what doors can open for you. Yeah. And just never give up and enjoy doing it. When you're doing it, you know, because, you know, I mentioned to you yesterday, life is so short.
That is so short.
You really have to enjoy what you're doing, and at the same time, live life. You know, you have to have it takes certain things to happen to you in life where, you know, my outlook on life now is just like, I look at you here, we're having this conversation. This is a moment, Jerry. This won't happen again.
Right.
You know, everything that happens every day, every moment, you know, that's how you need to start looking at life, and you just try to, you know, to aim and push yourself, you know, help others along that journey, this short journey in life. Mm-hmm. And so back to your original question, is just to get somebody at that level, you have to have a mentor. You have to have somebody that teaches you self-esteem, teaches you something of worth. It helps you point in the right directions, because it's anything is possible. Mm-hmm. Anything is possible. There's no limitation to what you want to do.
Yeah. Now, you're very busy, and you talked about life and living life in moments, and self-care must be a good part of that as well, taking care of yourself physically, mentally. Yeah. What do you do for fun? Relax?
Relax. I love golf, and I can get out and play golf. You know, I love the game. I won't say the game loves me. I do a lot of, I like riding. I have a mountain bike. My sons and I have a group of friends to ride up in the hills to like Newcastle, Hollywell, that type of thing. I have to have, you know, my days are long. I have to have a trainer that comes in, or I do Zoom twice a week. You know, something cardio, just to make sure you're keeping on top of that part of it. And other than that, there's nothing better than on a weekend getting together with some family, good friends, lighting a grill, sitting down, getting some good laughs. You'll be amazed how a really good laugh, yeah, and it's so soothing to the soul.
Yeah. and we've had many of those.
And fishing. I do a lot of fishing when I can get the chance. So,
yeah.
Outdoors, anything outdoors, I enjoy doing outdoors.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes I tell my children about my time at Howard, and it's one particular event that I always tell them about, and it was when I spilled the red juice on the carpet at the home, and your cousin Chris Hendricks was there. And to this day, I don't know if I could ever face Chris ever again, because I know he's going to remember that night and that type of thing. So friendship, I'm going to tie all of this stuff together, because at the end of the day, this podcast is for folks hearing your story. And quite frankly, I'm hearing your story, and I would have never thought some of the things you have overcome in terms of the early development. But when you say friends, we use that term very loosely today, I think, you know, social media and everything else. And friends, mentors, things like that. Do you get the sense that in order for you to be an influence on someone, you said you're humble. We all know that. You're very quiet, very reserved. But how do people get to the point where they have these authentic friendships? How do they build them? How do I build these mentorships so I can be in the spaces where a Dr. Knight is? How have you gone about doing that? How can people get a chance to be next to a Dr. Knight? And what would it be for someone to be in your space? Mm-hmm. What are some of the characteristics of that relationship?
Well, for a start, we are, you know, for the mentorship part of it, we do shadowing, like for students who know they want to do dentistry or even more so orthodontics. Then, you know, we have a program in the office where they'll come and they'll shadow us for maybe 2 weeks, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, so they can see exactly, you know, what it is that it, you know, involves in terms of the day-to-day running of our practice. We also teach. I teach up at UWE. I do a lecture in orthodontics there. Not a lot, I mean, once a year. And through that, you get to meet the students. And then we also have those students, for their orthodontic part, they need to do a laboratory part of it, which they rotate through our office. So they spend maybe 2 months, every once or twice a week, coming through our office. So they get to see, you know, exactly in terms of the lab work and a one-to-one with us in the practice. Mm-hmm. And we're very open to them asking whatever questions they are. People, you know, we do, you know, go out and do like lectures. Like I've been invited to do the speech at graduation. So on that, when you have dentists graduating, they have to, you know, you know, they're nervous coming out here. So you sort of, you know, walk them through what it is leaving school and, you know, getting into the practice and everything like that. So from that point of view, you have that sort of contact with them. And with the friendship part, Jerry, you know who that is? I mean, the people we met at Howard, all you guys, you know, that's lifelong friendships. You know, we keep in touch. Everybody will follow each other's families. And I always tell, you know, a lot of people, some, you know, stuff will happen to them in life, Jerry, and they'll say, I'm so disappointed with that person. I'm so disappointed that he could have done this or she could have done that.
Right.
And I always tell people, and say, what you need to do when you meet somebody is that you need to make a judgment on that person's character. And you'll find 9 out of 10 times when you can read a person and then something happens down the line, you know, you don't get disappointed because right. You're going to say to yourself, you know, really, really and truly, this could have happened. You know, so you need to have a good judge of character. And real good friends like us, you'll find people sit down, you spend a whole evening together. Nobody asks me, what am I doing? What is my practice? And I'm not asking you in terms of business. We're just talking
just about friends.
Good vibes and friendship and everything like that.
Just you friends.
Know? So it's that friendship we got at Howard, those are our lifelong friends that we have now. And when I come back to Washington, you know, it's just like coming back home, you know, and down here in Jamaica, there's so much of us down here. You know, it's amazing, you know, life. Give thanks every day.
Give thanks.
It's been good for us.
As you said, the big man and the faith upstairs, that has something to do with it, to make those connections. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Dr. Knight, I'm saying Dr. Knight because I'm going to ask you to put on your pastoral hat and exercise some of that devotion and faith and what that undergirds you. You know, we're living in a time where it's tough. It's really tough. We have COVID. Economies are turned upside down. You know, you run into people and you see a sense of, oh my God, I can't make it. Things are just out of whack. I don't see a future. And quite frankly, some people are depressed and everything else. So from a pastoral perspective, I'm putting that in air quotes, what are some words of inspiration and hope that you could share with the audience, just from whatever lens through which you want to take it? Mm-hmm. But how would you encourage not just young people, but people in general? What are some words that you could share?
I definitely say that you need to really believe and have the faith, because no matter how much you worry about what's going to happen tomorrow or what can happen tomorrow, in truth and in fact, that's something that's not so much in your control.
Wow.
You put everything, you know, I tell my sons, every golf tournament they have, everything they're doing, we pray before, you know, and I tell them, I said, look, you know, just put it there, what it is that you want. Say a prayer to the Almighty and put it at his feet. Mm. If it's to be, it will be. If it's not to be, you know, it won't, but there's a reason why it's not supposed to be. You know, but just put that faith in something higher and pray about it. And my advice, I tell everybody, is that since I've been doing that, the years and years and years I've been doing that, and I do my morning devotion every morning, and I have my list that I go through with everything, every problem that comes up, everything that I see as a challenge, anything I'm nervous about, Jerry, and I just leave it there. And there's a certain inner peace that you feel when you step away and you leave it in Almighty's hand. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to boast and say that the majority of the time it happens, but it does. Good things happen. Very good things happen.
Yeah.
Both my wife and I, you know, we're very, very, very strong in our faith and things that everything we do, you know, we pray about it.
Yeah.
Just ask for guidance, you know, with our kids, the same thing. You know, and my mom always used to tell me, and I want to tell you this, it's her prayers that get me through the early part of my life. You know, her prayers. Yeah. That she prayed for me. You know?
But, they say the prayers of the righteous avail it much. So thank God for mom and grandmom. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I feel you.
But on a daily basis, just, you know, unless you have that faith, you know, things, you know, I just talk about it. I can't figure people going through life and not putting things out there and saying, you know, this is what I'm asking, or this is what I need help with, or, you know, for everything you're doing in life. You know, it's just such a feeling that, you know, once out there, you just feel at peace. And you say, you know, if it's to be, it's to be. There's nothing I can do about it. And you just, you know, just leave it there. And it's just, when I say, the younger ones, I'd say, do what you're doing, everything we talked about over the last hour. But number one, every day of life, make sure, you know, give thanks for where you are in life. Give thanks to your parents' generations, your generations. You know, give thanks to what you're doing in terms of your practice. You know, make sure, especially with the pandemic, you want to put a blanket of protection over everybody, family, friends, those that are going through treatments, those that are going through loss of family. You know, you pray for them every morning, you know.
Yeah, but you know, and it's interesting you say that. I do that myself, and it's, I was, like I said the other day, this obedience thing, I don't understand it. Mm-hmm. But when you get obedient, some things do in fact happen. I'll give you the last word before we close. Anything on your heart that I didn't ask a question, or something that you would like to share as part of this whole idea of uplifting others? I'll give you the last word, as I do all guests.
I just say, Jerry, especially for, you know, I'm speaking really specifically for those going through like university, that, you know, anything is possible. You know, just, it's hard work, but it's going to be fun.
Mm.
And whatever it goes, it overflows into life. You know, whatever you're doing, just make sure that you're really enjoying it. And you put in the work now, you make the sacrifice. And later on in life, you know, you're just going to look back and laugh and say, well, you know, I had so much fun doing this. it was hard, you know, it was challenging. But if you put the work in now, you're definitely going to reap later on. And it's everything in terms of what you're doing in terms of your job, what you're doing in terms of your family. You know, it's a whole big picture, you know. But just believe in yourself, and, you know, anything is possible.
Amen, my brother. Amen. Amen. I will tell you a funny story. I shared an article with your wife, and she emailed me the name. The name of my boss is Cartwright. I don't know if she told you this story.
No.
Yeah. So now we're on a hunt to see, because the Cartwrights are from the Bahamas.
Right.
And Dr. Cartwright. So he said, she must be a Cartwright. So we're going to try to make that match. So I just wanted to share that story as we get to a close, because in a little way to say, you never know who you run across in any space and any time that you are. And I want to say this to you personally, my friend. I've watched you for a long time. I've watched you from a distance. And I must say, I learned a lot about you today that I would have never thought. I met you when I was older, when we got to college. Yes, that's true. University, Howard. But I've always admired your discipline. I used to marvel to say myself, this guy's getting all these good grades and it seems effortless. Now I know you were actually studying. And I want to say to you, just thank you for being who you are, the gift that you are to your friends, those of us that know you well. Just thank you for being that person. And I can tell you, this is another one of these episodes where I'm going to get a text or an email to say to me, thank you again for the authenticity of your guest. So I want to thank you first and foremost for just joining little old me on this podcast. I try to do this to bring stories to uplift and motivate people and inspire people. And quite frankly, Nigel, you did that tonight. And for that, sir, I'm eternally grateful.
Jerry, we learn from the best. Trust me. Trust me, my friend. We've learned from the best. Yeah. And hey, it's all about the village. You know, we're all part of this village.
That is correct. So, it is my
pleasure. And, you know, it's just great. It's great watching everybody. So much fun.
So much fun. So much fun. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've just spent the last hour with, I'm going to give him his official title, Dr. Nigel Knight. And you've heard another journey, another inspirational journey, one that took it twists and turns, but one that's grounded and rooted in his faith and his perseverance. And more importantly, rooted in all the things we try to do on this podcast, is to remind people that you can indeed make it. So until next week, remember, this is It's Easy, Son, your life lessons on your journey to your purpose. And until next week, be safe. And always be mindful of the big man above and all that he can do for you. Take care, and we'll see you next time.